You may not realize it right now, but the music that you just heard so wonderfully complements what we're about to talk about. This month, the Toledo Museum of Art debuts the first exhibition that focuses solely on the wondrous artist books and works on paper by a renowned German-born artist, Werner Pfeiffer. Nearly 200 one-of-a-kind and limited-edition artist books, dimensional prints, collages, and experimental works will be shown in Drawn, Cut, and Layered, The Art of Werner Pfeiffer. Some of the works will be seen publicly for the first time. So, you may be asking yourself, Joe, why are you promoting an event at the Toledo Museum of Art? Well, that's because the artist is right here from Red Hook, and we certainly couldn't let those Toledoans have all the fun. No, we want to share the great work that is being done right here in our region. Werner Pfeiffer's interest in paper and books was born in his early years in Germany during and after World War II, when paper was limited and books were censored. The artist himself joins us now, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Werner Pfeiffer to the roundtable. Thank you so much for being with us.
Pleasure is on my part. Thank you very much for having me.
I just have to say that you have this, the exhibit opened February 6th, it runs through May 3rd at the Toledo Museum of Art. And in just the announcement and invitation itself is the coolest thing in the world because it allows you to play with paper. It's just you've seen brochures time and time again, but you've never seen anything like this. And I guess that's a nice way of describing your work, because we look at a piece of paper and then suddenly you see all of the possibilities there that we do not see. Perhaps.
Well, what is really part of the announcement or the little brochure is one of the main concepts in my work is I want people to touch it. It's not only looking at it, but also work with it, like my books and some of my prints and some of the collages that are really involved in dealing with paper. So we thought that this might be a very interesting kind of teaser to get people to really look at this and start turning and turning. And it's what is called a flexagon, which is an old format. And we just reintroduced it here, and it keeps rotating. It comes back to itself. It's kind of architectural. So this is sort of one of the key elements in the show. It is paper, and it's sculpture, and it's structural.
And so there's an engineering quality to this as well, right?
Yeah, in some ways, you know, everyone asks me, are you an engineer? Are you an architect? Are you, right, you know, technically trained? I'm not, you know. I'm fascinated by it because that's part of our life.
Although we have to say that many times, certainly architects, we look at the work of architects and we can put that in, and it is often lumped into an artistic venue, an artistic vein, where we say that that is art, and we look at the drawings of the architect. So to go the opposite way of having an artist do something architectural, that yes, that of course is artistic.
Yeah, because I mean, paper is the way we look at it traditionally is kind of a surface we think of writing on and drawing on and printing on. But when you start really taking it in your hand, you start giving it a crease, a fold, it suddenly becomes a structural member, and that's a very architectural kind of component that really is not known to most people.
I don't mean to be overly psychological here, but it seems to me that it takes a special neuron in the brain to fire to not just see the surface, to see it as that structure, to see it as an architectural structure.
I think it's somewhat comes out of my curiosity and maybe the idea of having no paper in my early years. There was very little around. And then when it finally was available, I was very curious what this thing was. And then I studied its history. I did some paper myself and began to realize this is a very unusual material. It starts in a slushy kind of stage before it's a sheet. And then when you look at it, you know, it's really has a very unusual characteristic. There's a membrane paper, there's a structure in paper, fiber that runs and gives it a direction. And if you don't respect this, they fight you.
When you talk about respect, I find that to be a fascinating word, much less it's a fascinating concept, because we think of paper, it depends, of course, but paper can be very fragile. There's a fragility to paper.
It's true. It's true. And you know, as I suggested, paper has a kind of an inner life. And when you take a sheet of paper and you try to crease it, it has resistance in different directions because of the fiber, the way it's made. And it's just instilled from the earliest years in looking at paper, it's still a great respect for me. And to this day, when I sit in front of a large sheet of paper and I have to make a drawing or do a collage, I get very intimidated because it's this one piece that has been created, and it instills a respect in me to this day.
Talk a little bit, just for our listening audience who may not be able to visualize what we're talking about, and certainly we invite you to go online, and you can go to WAMC.org and you can see our web stream, and we'll be showing, you know, I'm playing with this thing in my hand,
so there is
fun, we're twisting it around, but this is different than origami. This is different.
Oh, yeah. Origami is a very different process, you know.
Okay, so you take the paper and you make it into a swan. That's not what you're into.
No. What I do is mostly, and it evolved out of books, mostly making books, and it has to do with the change in the role of the book. And so I'm making artist books that are really trying to point into different directions, and I want people to really experience these books not only by vision and reading, but also by a sensory tactile format, and get a sense of that there's more to experiencing a piece of paper or bound pieces of paper in a book than just turning a page. You can take it out and form a structure, and a lot of my books have this kind of thing, where you actually manipulate it and really redesign the basic concept that I have set out, and then it is a participatory action, and paper is the conduit. You know, that's basically the way I sort of fell into this. You know,
and it seems as though you enjoy, and if there is I think in looking at your work that there's a little wink many times that you enjoy the contradictory nature of what you do.
Absolutely.
It's like, oh, look what I did with what you made, thinking that was that. Well, now look at what this is.
It's true. I play a lot with irony and little twists, and I'm into a lot of puzzles and kind of...
Yeah.
Rube Goldberg has fascinated me. The kind of stuff that goes somewhere and you think it's there, and then boom, it goes somewhere else. And it's very, very fascinating.
And you mentioned Rube Goldberg, and of course known for these Goldbergian machines where the little ball will then hit the match, which will light the string, which will then end up feeding the dog. So
cause and effect.
That's right, cause and effect. So, but you look at that in there is a puzzle quality to much of your work. So I don't think it's overstating that there's a story being told as the consumer of the art, if you will. Mm-hmm. A beginning, a middle, and an end. There is a story being told as we turn and move the paper and manipulate it in a certain way.
Yeah, because I think, you know, each story has its own part that is shaped by the viewer. When you read a novel, you know, we have our own fantasy, we have our own imagination. And I do it visually, with visual image and paper and surface, and let the viewer really contribute to the piece itself, which is sort of part of my dialogue with the viewer of the piece itself.
I just want to mention that if people want to see some work and pictures of it, they can obviously go to ToledoMuseum.org or just Google Werner Pfeiffer, and you'll see many of the pieces that we're talking about. You had some of your work shown, I guess, at Vassar 2 years ago.
Right. That was sort of the conduit to the show in Toledo. I began really putting together a couple of shows. The first one is at Smith College,
mm-hmm.
and that traveled to Cornell and to Penn and Toronto University. And then the second show was a single show at Vassar, which was both in the library and in the art museum. And that sort of got the curiosity going on the Toledo Museum side. And we had been in touch with, over the years, you know. They are the second largest, have the second largest book collection as of any museum. Mm. And it started as a donation by Walter and Molly Barries. He was a board member of the Museum of Modern Art. And rather than giving his collection to the modern, he decided to go to Toledo, where his wife was from, and I had a book in there, and that's how the initial contact was formed. And the book I did for them was that was in the collection was called Liber Mobile. It's a kind of a piece that was stimulated by McLuhan's writings in the mid-early 60s, and he was very much into predicting that we are going to be a visual society rather than a typographic society. And this whole thing sort of stimulated this book that I did in 1967, and it's still quite relevant. It's a sort of kind of looking at the end of the typographic age and looking forward into what books and what the digital age would bring. We didn't know about the digital age in the 60s. It was just in its infancy, but the television and the visualization of our conversation, of our dialogue, was very, very much prominent. And that was stimulated this piece.
Because you did a whole project, this zigzag, right?
Right.
Looking at the very nature of paper.
Exactly.
Talk a little bit about there's a work in the show called Hocus Pocus, and this ultimately was born out of the horrors of World War I.
Well, you know, Hocus Pocus is a kind of a an homage to Dada. And it started, I'm fascinated by Dada, very influenced by Dada itself. And in the, about 5-6 years ago, there was a big show in the Musée Modern Art, the National Gallery in the Pompidou, and their catalog was probably the most complete collection of all the Dada ever produced. And I looked at this and said, you know, what would Dada people say if they would be suddenly honored in the biggest art establishments? They would probably feel either funny or would feel kind of laughing at it, because they always, in their entire process, they were fighting establishment. That was the kind of thing they didn't want. So what I did is I took the book and cut it up into 18 little books and made a Dada out of it. And that's essentially the thought. So when you look at the book, it is broken down into small details. Each little part is bound, rebound, so you have this fraction of a Dada, and voila, it shows you complete different ways of looking at things.
Talk to us about metaphor, of how you can then take a piece of paper, have an idea, and do something with it and manipulate it in a way and have us not lose the metaphor. And in other words, that we understand what you are getting at.
Well, it's essentially the trick of getting you come back to what I initially set out to do. And if you look at most of the paper things I work, they deal with examining the surfaces from multiple sides.
Right.
And looking from the back, looking from the front, looking from the edge. And the loss of the image and the loss of the message is really never appears, you know, it never goes away. It's just sort of twisted and bent into different formations, and it comes back, you know, so that it never really goes away.
I'm sitting here and I'm talking to you, and the one thing that comes like immediately into my mind as a question is, man, I bet you can make a hell of a paper airplane.
I have made some, yeah.
I bet you can. And so aerodynamic and...
Right, right.
Yeah,
you know.
That's very cool. When you set out on a project, because you're doing a lot of commission work, right?
Someone
will say, you're in the 9/11 Memorial Museum, for example.
Exactly.
So they come to you and say, this is what we're looking for, sort of. That
piece actually came about in a very different way. You know, I was very close to the event in Manhattan. I was about a mile away on the Brooklyn side, and I saw the second plane hit the tower, the second tower, and I saw the towers go down. And that triggered in me a kind of a childhood memory. I was born just before the Second World War, and our house was bombed during the war and started burning. And, you know, all the three families that lived in the house, we were sitting in the cellar. So we didn't realize what was going on. And essentially people got us out. And when I saw this event in New York and with the World Trade Centers, it just brought this thing back into my present, and I had to do something. So for a number of years, I did a lot of studies, drawings, investigations, and I wanted to do a piece that essentially memorializes the event. And being a sculptor and a bookmaker and a printmaker, I thought there should be a way to do this as a sculpture, a book as a sculpture, as a print. And that's what I did. So it's a book that is about 12 by 12 by 4 inches, and it unfolds and out you can build the two towers. When they're all set up, they're 6 feet tall, and they're sort of covered with two large woodcuts that depict people falling to their death in the midst of debris of buildings. And then it tapers off towards the top of each tower, and the names of the victims are present on top as a kind of a reminder that it was people who gave their life or died in this process.
So it seems, in working, for the many years that you spent working on that, it's not so much the design or the architecture or the manipulation or the of the paper or the engineering as much as it is of what you want to say and process what you saw, how it reflects to what you saw as a child, and how that's going to present itself.
Correct.
For you as the artist.
Correct. But, you know, in the looking at this piece, again, it goes in the same direction where I want people to touch it. You put this book together, and the process of putting it together stimulates and triggers this kind of process that you put it up, and then the most, you know, awesome part of it, the most, you know, strongest emotion comes when you take it down, and the book comes back, and it falls back into this book form, and it's like an urn. It's like, you know, you put the ashes in there and you close it, and then you come back and another time, remember it again, and redo it.
Well, my question was a long way of asking you that you have to, the actual thinking about it, can often take longer than the actual working on.
Oh, absolutely.
Of creating it.
Oh, absolutely. When you do a work, you know, it goes in spurs. Like you have an idea and then you make notes, sketches, and then put it aside. Then you come back to it, you know, maybe a couple of months, couple of days, you look at it and work a little more on it. And so it's a process of slowly evolving some statement that you really trust. And sometimes it can take 2 years, 3 years, you know. And the actual execution is not that complicated because you have your skills and you depict it in a specific medium, and then you can simply attend to really doing the rendering and the processing right. But to come up with the idea and to evolve the idea, that's the hardest part.
What is next for you? Will this exhibit in Toledo go elsewhere, or?
We hope so. We are trying to work out some either parts of it, see that it would continue in some form, because it's a wonderful show, and it's a lot of stuff that we have assembled, almost 200 pieces, and they did a great job in installing it. So it's a really beautiful thing to see, you know.
And meanwhile, the creating goes on in Red Hook.
That's right. In spite of the snow.
All kinds of cool things happening down there. Hudson Valley-based artist Werner Pfeiffer is the man behind Drawn, Cut, and Layered, The Art of Werner Pfeiffer, which is at the Toledo Museum of Art February 6th through May 3rd, which you can check out their website. And if, you know, goodness, if you're there, go see it. It's absolutely amazing. And we should also mention that you're in the permanent collections of the Art Institute of Chicago, the Boston Museum of Fine Art, the 9/11 Memorial Museum, and the Museum of Modern Art in New York City. Werner Pfeiffer, what a great pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much. It was my pleasure.
Thank you. We post all of our segments online, wamc.org/roundtable. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.